The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Cochran, Judge Sleater, Judge Kirk, the Honorable Jean M. Cochran presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. For purposes of the recording, I'll just note that today is March 11th, 2025. With me on the panel today are Judges Sleater and Kirk. As you know, we are proceeding by Zoom today. The oral argument protocols will be the same. I'll go ahead and call the first case on our calendar. It's A24-1414, State of Minnesota versus Joseph Benjamin Holney. Counsel for appellant, you can proceed when you're ready. I'll just ask that you identify yourself and the party you represent at the beginning of your argument. And also, I'll note that you can see the time in the grid view. There's a clock there, but you'll have 15 minutes for your primary argument and 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Erica Hovey and I represent the appellant Joseph Holm. I am able to view the marshal's time countdown. This case is about a direct violation of a fundamental constitutional right, the Fourth Amendment's protection against warrantless home entries. Mr. Holm's rights were violated when law enforcement unlawfully entered his garage without a warrant, without exigent circumstances, and without valid probable cause. The district court wrongly concluded that Mr. Holmes' lawful act of pulling into his own driveway and stopping in his open garage amounted to felony fleeing. It did not. Because there was no flight, no immediate danger, and no justification for a warrantless entry, this court should reverse the district court's ruling and suppress all evidence following the unlawful entry into the garage. The standard of review in this case is de novo for the district court's legal conclusions, including whether probable cause existed and whether exigent circumstances justified the warrantless entry. While factual
So
findings are.
just to clarify, you're not challenging any of the district court's factual findings.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I guess I should indicate that, while the factual findings are reviewed for clear error, this court does independently review the application of law to those facts, meaning that the court is allowed to reassess the district court's incorrect legal determinations without deference, particularly the misapplication of probable cause with the facts that are existing in this case, and exigent circumstances. It is well settled
Ms.
that
Ho
one.
Ms. Hovey, can I have a follow-up question? Well, it's not really not a follow-up question, but in terms of the legal argument, if I understood correctly, the state's initial argument is different than it was in their briefing to the court, and it was related to whether there was an implied public access to the garage. And so it sounds like, or it reads like, at least the judge took kind of a third option. It wasn't the argument that either the you parties made, but then the judge on her own explored this fleeing as a felony. How does that impact, or does it at all impact our analysis, the fact that neither of the parties' arguments, at least then, were what the judge relied on, and now the parties' arguments as well are slightly different, at least from the respondent's standpoint, as I see it.
Yes, Your Honor, you are correct that the court did take on a third approach, which was not argued by any of the parties in the briefing stage of this proceeding. While the a district court does have the ability to review the law in its entirety and provide justifications in order to effectuate the law, I do believe that this court should consider that the court did a post hoc application of the facts that were not argued by the parties, and so I do think that that would factor into this court's decision. Here, because a warrantless entries into the home is presumptive unreasonable or un is presumptively unreasonable, and attached garages enjoy the same protections of the home, this court should reverse the district court's decision for three rulings or for three reasons. There's no probable cause for felony fleeing as Mr. Holmes' actions did not meet the legal definition and lacked intent to evade law enforcement. Second, no exigent circumstances existed to justify bypassing the Fourth Amendment's warrant requirement to enter his garage. And third, Upholding the district court's decision would set a dangerous precedent, and it would allow law enforcement to bypass constitutional protections with speculative reasons and undermining citizens' privacy rights. Regarding
Counsel, counsel, as to your first point, though, it was my understanding that your client was aware that the officer had at least activated his lights when he pulled into the garage. Is that a fair statement?
There's no factual basis that Mr. Holm did recognize the lights at the time. Mr. Holm did not testify at the omnibus hearing. And
Okay.
so
Was
that's what
there any
decided.
suggestion from the officer's testimony that the appellant was aware of his presence?
The officer testified that once he activated his lights, that Mr. Holm did not stop his vehicle, but proceeded into his garage. And after Mr. Holm exited the vehicle, he approached the officer, who was then parked behind him. And so, you know, the record is silent as to whether Mr. Holm did recognize that law enforcement was pulling him over at that time. But the officer did suggest that Mr. Holm then engaged with the traffic stop by standing at the threshold of the garage and speaking with law enforcement regarding the traffic stop.
When you say the threshold, did he ever leave the garage?
Mr. Holm never left the garage, and that is evidenced by the in-car video that has been submitted as an exhibit in the district court omnibus hearing.
Thank you.
Counsel, just to follow up on Judge Kirk's questions, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the record reflects that as Mr. Holm was pulling into his driveway, the officer turned on the lights of the police officer's car and then turned the siren on briefly before Mr. Holm was in the garage.
Yes, it is my understanding from the record that the officer used the words, I believe, chirp, to indicate that it was a short, brief siren in addition to the lights that were activated. However, it is important to note that the officer did acknowledge that Mr. Holm was in the process of pulling into his driveway at the time that the lights were activated and then proceeded into the open garage. The district court improperly broadened the definition of fleeing a peace officer under Minnesota Statute 609.487. Under the felony fleeing statute, conduct that demonstrates intentional attempt to elude police with a vehicle includes conduct such as increasing speed, turning off lights, and refusing to stop. Mr. Holm did none of these things. As I previously indicated, he had already begun turning into his driveway before the officer Yago activated his emergency lights. He slowed his vehicle and then came to a complete stop within seconds, less than 15 seconds, with inside his open garage. And after stopping his vehicle, he made no evasive maneuvers. He never attempted to shut the garage door and immediately engaged in conversation with Officer Yago. If you compare Mr. Holm's actions with State v. Robinson, where the Supreme Court held that the district court did not err in dismissing a charge for lack of probable cause, when a defendant continued to drive for 5 miles after an officer initiated his traffic stop, Mr. Holm's actions are a far cry from Robinson. They're also distinguishable from State v. Paul, where the officer knew a defendant had been intoxicated from a prior interaction. And then the officer made commands to remain in a truck with the driver disregarded, locked the door behind him, and then the officer ultimately had to receive consent to enter the home where the defendant fled to. In that case, the court did find that there had been fleeing and or justification to enter the home, but the facts are highly distinguishable.
So, counsel, here, the district court seems to have found that the defendant refused to stop because he pulled into the garage instead of stopping in the driveway, or at least there was probable cause to find fleeing on that basis. And that I think that's the argument the state makes in its brief. Can you respond to that argument as to whether or not the failure to stop in the driveway is a is a refusal to stop within the meaning of the of fleeing in the statute.
Yes, Your Honor. The record in this case is silent as to whether it was even possible for Mr. Holm to stop or practical for Mr. Holm to stop in the driveway. We do acknowledge that Mr. Holm did pull the vehicle into the garage, which is evidenced by the body cam. However, it is not every traffic stop involves some type of continuing to drive. It would be unreasonable for a court to find that a person who refused to slam on the brakes the moment that an officer turns on his lights is somehow equatable to probable cause for felony fleeing. In this case, there's no testimony from the officer or any other evidence presented that it was reasonable or practical for Mr. Holm to stop before entering his garage. As outlined in the appellant's reply brief, there are several laws in Minnesota that prohibit a person from inhibiting traffic or from inhibiting the flow or safety of other people. In this case, there is a sidewalk, there is oncoming traffic as Mr. Holm is pulling into the driveway. And it's not an argument about de minimis fleeing. The act of pulling over, braking, slowing, reducing speed, and then pulling over to a safe location cannot amount to felony fleeing under an objective totality of the circumstances. And it is, again, very, the state will argue that the officer's subjective belief, when the officer testified at the omnibus hearing, that he did not observe any fleeing behavior at the time that he initiated the traffic stop. While the state may argue that the totality of the circumstances requires an objective review, there's no evidence in the record to suggest that the officer's testimony was subjective. The officer.
Ms. Hovey, along those lines, and this maybe is a combination your answer to Judge Cochran's first question about clear air, but it also is a legal question. And the judge, in her order, doesn't seem to, at least I don't recall, specifically say that your client was aware of the lights and then the brief siren. But I'm looking on the bottom of page 5. Addendum 5. If I'm understanding your argument, the judge says defendant's action of driving the Jeep into his garage after Officer Iago had activated his emergency lights and siren, then refusing to come out to discuss the traffic violation, amounts to, and then later she says fleeing. So it's a two-part question, one about facts, one about law. I'm assuming you disagree with both. In other words, if I hear you saying today there's nothing in the record to indicate that your client was aware of the initiation of a traffic stop. But number two, your point being, in any event, once he's in the garage for this equipment violation, there would be no legal obligation to come out of the garage, past the threshold. Am I understanding your point on both of those?
It is correct that the act of pulling into the garage is not fleeing. And I guess I would disagree with the district court's conclusion that or the finding that Mr. Holm refused to come out of the garage to discuss the traffic stop. As evidenced by the record and the video submitted in this case, Mr. Holm did engage in a minutes-long conversation with the officer at the threshold to talk about the traffic stop. While it may not have been to the extent that the officer appreciated being able to have him step out of the garage, there was nothing inhibiting their discussion about the traffic stop that was taking place. And I apologize, Judge, I maybe missed the question. So would you
Well,
mind?
no, I think you did. Would it be fair to say or surmise, at least infer from these facts? Obviously, the officer could talk about and I think they did about the equipment, tail light. Your point being, at that point, the officer should have said, "Okay, have a good evening," and left. In other words, it seemed like the officer did obviously have an inference of something or interest to talk about something beyond the brake light.
Our position is not that the officer at that point goes and says, "Have a good night. You pulled into the garage, and now I can't effectuate. I can't continue with my investigation." My argument is that there was nothing that inhibited the officer's investigation. While the officer never testified that this was a pretextual stop, there's evidence in the law that officers will pull over a vehicle for equipment violation and then proceed with general questioning and to pick up in indications of other types of crimes that have been committed. In this case, the officer was able to conduct his investigation. There was nothing inhibiting his investigation or his ability to provide a traffic ticket for having no taillights illuminated. There is he could have easily issued the citation without having to cross over the threshold or without being able to conduct the rest of his investigation or the traffic stop itself.
Counsel, kind of following up on that, in terms of entering the garage, there needs to be two things for the exception to apply: probable cause of a serious crime and exigent circumstances. And it doesn't appear that the district court found exigent circumstances. Instead, the district court relied on Minnesota Statute 629.34. And you can answer this briefly now and address it more on rebuttal, but does that statute provide a basis for the officer to enter the garage based on the traffic equipment violation?
No, Your Honor, and I can answer it more on my rebuttal, but that statute requires that the officer is effecting an arrest at that time. And I'll reserve or answer the question on rebuttal.
Okay, thank you. All right, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you can proceed when you're ready. If you would please identify yourself and the party you represent for purposes of the recording, we would appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Steve Biedelsbacher, representing the state of Minnesota. May it please the court, Ms. Hovey. Essentially, the district court got this right. Maybe didn't elaborate as much as we'd like, but the district court essentially got this right. And I agree with counsel for the appellant on the standard of review before the court. First, I'd like to explain how this conduct does fall within at least probable cause to believe that Mr. Holm was committing fleeing in a motor vehicle.
Before you turn to that, would you agree that it appears from your brief that you agree with the legal standards as set forth in appellant's brief in terms of the Fourth Amendment and whether the officer could lawfully enter the garage without a warrant?
Yes, I would say that's essentially right.
So in order for the officer to enter the garage without a warrant, there would need to be probable cause of a serious crime and exigent circumstances. Would you agree with
yes,
that?
Yes, I do agree with that.
And the district court didn't, the district court made a finding about probable cause, but as I read the district court's order, I don't see any finding as to exigent circumstances. Would you agree with that?
I would not agree with that. I would agree that the analysis is very brief and perhaps conclusory, but court did find.
In your brief, you don't argue exigent circumstances at all. The appellant argues that the record doesn't support a finding of exigent circumstances. And I didn't see in your brief that there was any response to that argument, which is why I'm asking these questions, because if there aren't exigent circumstances to support the entry, then I think that answers the question for us as to whether or not the district court erred in its analysis.
I do agree with that, and I would intend to elaborate on why there are exigent circumstances in the coming moments.
All right. Well, if you could point to where in the district court's order you think it actually addresses that, that would be helpful. And then you could proceed with your argument. I just think that that is a critical piece of for us to consider in terms of your argument, because I didn't see that in your brief.
I do agree with that, Your Honor. I'm not spotting the word in the district court's order, but the standard review here is de novo, and I would like to address it even if the district court didn't quite get there.
But you'd agree you didn't address it in your brief either.
Essentially, yes, I failed to get there, but I am prepared to argue that.
All right, thank you.
First, as to fleeing in a motor vehicle, the statute makes it a crime to flee or attempt to flee, and attempt, of course, being a substantial step toward the completed offense. And here, the circumstances of the essentially the distance really falls between where the officer turns on his lights, which occurs essentially right after Mr. Holm signals and then begins to turn toward his driveway, and then where Mr. Holm stops his vehicle fully inside of the garage. In this case, Mr. Holm retreated into his garage, pulled all the way in, far enough in that he was able to close the door as he suggested he was going to do. In this context, he went as far as he could. Of course, if it was on the roadside and there's essentially unlimited road ahead, of course, fleeing could take place over a greater distance. But in this case, where he'd already begun the turn, he went as far as he could. There is no number of feet, no first 10 yards that don't count as fleeing.
So there's other things that are necessary to show an intent to flee, such as accelerating, turning wildly, demonstrating some manifest intent to get away. And is pulling into your garage when that's what you're in the process of doing, rather than stopping short, manifesting that kind of intent?
Your Honor, I think for purpose of finding probable cause here, yes. Certainly, there are many cases of motor vehicle fleeing that could be more egregious, ex as you indicated, accelerating. Here, of course, it'd be impossible to accelerate without perhaps crashing through the garage. But he did go as far as he could. He didn't stop in the driveway. He didn't stop partway into the garage. He went as far as he could. And then even indicated his willingness or hope to shut the door behind him to
Counsel,
retreat into his home.
can you point to one case in your years of experience where you had a person charged with fleeing a peace officer in a motor vehicle for driving literally 50 feet after the lights and perhaps siren beeped?
Your Honor, I can't come up with the case off the top of my head. No, I acknowledge that.
And I've seen a lot of these cases too, and I can't even come up with one that's relatively close to this, as far as the manifest intent to elude the officer.
And I think there's some indication of that even in the although I don't think this is dispositive, the officer's own discretion in not viewing this himself subjectively as fleeing, but that doesn't. My position essentially is that that doesn't change the legal analysis of whether it is within that, even if it is un, even if it's not how policing is practiced, even though policing isn't practiced in the maximal way, it still falls within fleeing.
Do you feel you're limited, though, to what the trial court did, or are you asking us to maybe consider something else?
Well, I'm asking the court to affirm the district court's finding that there is probable cause to believe that Mr. Holm was committing fleeing in a motor vehicle, attempting to get away in his vehicle.
So that's your sole argument.
Yes.
Thank you.
Counsel, I'm going to jump ahead to Judge Cochran's question. I did see where the judge did quote, there's no analysis, but did cite to State versus Moore and of exigent circumstances. And in that quote, circumstances exist in cases of hot pursuit, danger of human life, imminent destruction of evidence, and possible flight of the suspect. What among those descriptions would we find in the record to support your argument that there were exigent circumstances?
Well, I think flight of the suspect is perhaps the easiest one, as he's has gone into his garage and is. I will give him some credit. He didn't run into his house, but he certainly had a debate with the officer about whether the door could be closed. Essentially,
How
we
is
kind of.
that flight of the suspect if the suspect would remain in the suspect's home? I mean, flight of the suspect would be leaving the scene of the crime or leaving the scene, but here the suspect would be in a known location.
Yes, he essentially would be in there, but he's retreating into a private place, trying to escape responsibility for this public offense.
But
As I
the facts and the trial court didn't indicate that he was fleeing on foot, which is a separate crime that might arise in this type of a case. But it's the definition of fleeing in a motor vehicle that seems to be a higher standard.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm not sure that I've followed the question. I'm not alleging that he fled on foot.
Okay, so what I'm suggesting is if he had, after he stopped, run into the house, an argument could be made that he was fleeing on foot at that point. But that's not what we have here. So you're kind of stuck with this fleeing in a motor vehicle and evidence that would demonstrate his intent to do that in this like 50-foot space.
Yes, yeah, so I would concede that, and I think it's the pulling all the way into the garage, far enough into the garage that the door could be closed, that that evidences that he could have stopped in his driveway. And I appreciate the suggestion that he wasn't to slam on his brakes and cause the officer to collide into him, but that's I would say that is speculative. The suggestion that he should stop across the sidewalk, I'm not suggesting that, but he should have pulled over as soon as he could instead of going as far as he could. And this is a confined space, as I indicated before, but he should have pulled
How
over
does
when he
that
could.
indicate an intent to flee, especially where he gets out of the car and approaches, at least within the garage, the officer to converse with him?
Well, he's showing this is a compressed version of situation where a person keeps on driving to get home. I agree he was already most of the way home, but he's going all that way home into his own garage so he can shut the door.
Well,
Or go to
and
bed.
Mr. Beetlesbacher, and maybe this kind of puts the cart before the horse, so to speak, because that's the whole issue of whether he had the legal right or not to go into his garage and maybe go to bed and have it say good night to the officer. But getting back to exigent circumstances, let's assume you got the two parts. Let's assume you kind of barely get over a threshold of a probable cause of an offense that's not charged, and maybe the weakest fleeing in history that I've experienced as well. But let's assume that for the fact. Isn't it true, however, that you also need a serious crime that leads to exigency? And so, by your admissions, this fleeing certainly pales in experience to any seriousness of any fleeing any of us have seen before. So, what's the serious crime that would provide the exigent circumstance? You're familiar with the ones in the case law is talking about. Usually, there's a murder, there's a stabbing, there's something, and the suspect is fleeing away. You can go into the house, and we all know it, and we've seen it. How does this relate in any way to the law behind exigent circumstances in terms of seriousness of a crime that would authorize law enforcement to go into the garage and/or house?
Well, the test here is the totality of the circumstances. This is State v. Gray, which I apologize I did not cite in my brief, but it's 456 Northwest 2nd, 251. It's a 1990 State Supreme Court case, drawing itself on Dorman v. U.S. from 1970. It's in that case, there's seven factors that are explored, and it's a totality of the circumstances, not a threshold. But the first one, as Your Honor indicated, whether a grave or violent offense is involved. And It is a felony. Certainly, there are more grave felonies, but a homicide, for example, as I think was the example you offered. But motor vehicle fleeing, I contend, is a very risky and dangerous offense. Other factors are whether the suspect is reasonably believed to be armed, and I don't think there's anything here indicating that he is armed that would weigh in favor of that. Whether there is a strong probable cause to connecting the suspect to the offense. Well, here we have that. There's nobody else who could be believed to have been connected to the offense. And whether the police have strong reason to believe the suspect is on the premises. And of course, here that is completely obvious. He is right there. Whether it is likely the suspect will escape if not swiftly apprehended. Well, he at most would perhaps retreat into his own home. Whether peaceable entry was made. That certainly, my contention is it was almost. It's certainly peaceable entry weighs in favor here because it was an open garage. I'm not saying it was impliedly open to the public, but it was open. There was no breaking in. There was no entry into the most private parts of the home. It was, while an attached garage, and I acknowledge it's attached to the home, it is a garage. And then finally, whether a warrant could have been obtained. And I will concede that a warrant probably could have been obtained. And I will leave it at that. But my suggestion, my argument essentially is that the totality of those circumstances do weigh in favor of it being exigent and allowing the officer to make that entry into the garage to apprehend Mr. Holm.
But you would also concede that you didn't make that argument in your brief.
Yes.
And in this case, I think as Judge Sleater pointed out, it's not a murder. It was, if it was fleeing, it was a very calm fleeing into a garage, and Mr. Holmes stayed in the garage and with the garage door open and spoke to the officer or the off well, there were multiple officers there, but responded to questions. So how was this the kind of now or never exigency that would support a finding of, that the Supreme Court has identified as necessary to support exigent circumstances for warrantless entry into the constitutionally protected area?
Your Honor, I don't know that I really can do more than reiterate the argument I have made. The standard here, the facts are not in dispute, and the application of those of the law to those facts is, of course, the task of the court.
Thank you. All right, well, sorry. Counsel for appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Before I go back to Your Honor's question regarding the applicability of 629.34, I would just like to note that the state has conceded now that the officer did in fact have time to obtain a warrant, or that there was a basis for the officer to obtain a warrant. That is exactly why there are no exigent circumstances in this case. Exigent circumstances apply in urgent situations where there is destruction of evidence, threat of public safety, or risk of escape. By conceding that there was time and the opportunity for officers to obtain a warrant, that is exactly why entry into the home was not permissible in this case.
Counsel, though, weren't there, because you know full well that the officer is thinking DWI, whether he says it or not, but isn't there always in a case like this exigent circumstances? Because those who are kind of seasoned in the law involving DWI know that in a situation like this, if you take out your cell phone and it's dated and timed and start drinking bourbon straight, that it's pretty much going to destroy any later test's credibility. So there would be arguably exigent circumstances. The issue might be that there's no reasonable suspicion he'd been drinking. Is that a fair statement?
No, Your Honor, it's not a fair statement. The
Okay.
Supreme Court has noted that the dissipation of alcohol does not create the exigency to enter a dwelling. So the
Well,
mere.
that's dissipation, though. But had the officer testified, I was worried he might run in and start drinking. That's a whole different animal. And that goes to whether or not a person was driving at the time they were impaired.
I do believe that if the facts were changed, I think that there would be different outcomes. However, the officer never stated, the evidence is completely devoid of whether the officer was concerned that Mr. Holm was going to enter into his home and start drinking. The facts don't support that conclusion either. There was no evidence that Mr. Holm was going to leave, was going to flee, or made any effort to t attempt to elude officers or otherwise retreat into the home. And that's what is required when determining whether there are exigent circumstances that would justify an entry into the home.
And doesn't that go maybe to one of the biggest challenges the state has is that they don't seem to have reasonable suspicion that he was drinking based solely on the taillight issue?
Yes, Your Honor. When the officer was initiating the traffic stop, the sole basis was for an equipment violation. No swerving, no indication that there was alcohol involved. We would concede that once Mr. Holm exited the car and started speaking with law enforcement at the threshold of the car or at the threshold of the garage, that the officer did start making observations of impairment regarding bloodshot, watery eyes. However, there is no indication that entering into the garage would have prevented a serious offense. Specifically, both the Minnesota courts and the federal court, or in the Supreme Court, indicates that DUI offenses are not the type of offenses that would justify warrantless entry into most standard cases. And before my time concludes, I would like to go back to Judge Cochran's question about 629-34. Under that statute, an officer is allowed to effect an arrest when they see a public offense that is committed or attempted to be committed in the officer's presence. And then subdivision D allows them to make an arrest by breaking open a door or an inner window of the dwelling if, after notice and purpose, the officer is refused to be admitted into the dwelling. Now, the key differences between the applicability of that statute and how it doesn't apply here is that the officer at the time was initiating a traffic violation, which is not factually or legally in a position to make an arrest. And that's evidenced by the fact that the officer was at that point investigating. He testified on the record that I wanted to pull him out of the garage so I could continue my investigation. That is not enough to make an arrest. Whether legally or factually.
So, and I think the officer did testify that it was a non-criminal offense, so that wouldn't constitute a public offense under the statute. Is that essentially what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. Go ahead. And I can give you another minute to sum up if you need.
Your Honor, I would just, Your Honors, I would focus on the fact that whether or not, if the court finds that there was probable cause for fleeing, which arguably there is no evidence that there was felony fleeing, there's no exigent circumstances that existed to justify that entry. Finally, the state and the district court's decisions are overly broad. A mere movement into a dry or home cannot transform a routine traffic stop into a felony arrest. And so, for these reasons, we respectfully ask that the court reverse the district court's ruling, as the court is able to apply the facts to the law and find that neither of those situations exist. Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel for your helpful arguments here today. We will take the matter under advisement, and or rather, the matter is submitted, and we will issue our opinion within the statutory time frame.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.